Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are once again joined by Liz. Thank you for rounding out the week with us.
This has been a really fun set of minutes, so thank you for having me.
Of course. Thanks for enduring our dumb jokes, most of which I think will be cut, hopefully.
We'll see what makes it.
We'll see. All right. We are here on this lovely Friday. Hopefully it's a lovely Friday. Talking about minute 144 through 145. We get a new scene. We left off in a perfect transition yesterday. Black screen. Almost completely black screen. And we get a new day. It is a new day on Arrakis.
It is.
And we get this lovely image of the sun peeking over the dunes. We get some sort of peaceful music playing.
But also big old organ sounds, so a little sinister.
Yeah.
This is not the start of the Lion King that I remember.
No, but I am excited what this brand new day will bring to our intrepid crew and what fun adventures await from them. Oh God, the Baron's eaten by ants.
It's so beautiful for 1 second.
Ants.
God.
Big ass ants too. They're not just.
These are those
crawling into his ears.
I have a thing about a fear of insects in my ears.
It's because you don't have enough earwax to keep them.
Out? No, I don't want the earwax to attract them. All right. Why are we talking about ears again?
That's going to be so weird because I was absolutely 100% planning on cutting the earwax conversation.
Well, if you didn't, people will get it. If you did cut it, they're going to be very confused and this hunger for more.
What's up with Zach's earwax?
Anyways.
No, okay, so the Baron's being eaten by ants, or at least they're crawling all over him.
His body has been given to the desert. Yes. So
clearly, yes. Not a metaphor.
I'm kind of surprised that with as large as the man is, as he was probably thumped onto the desert, that it didn't attract the worm.
Just one singular large thump.
Yeah. They're wasn't very rhythmic.
How do you think they got him out there? Did they just chuck him out a thopter?
I think so. Yeah. I think they just put him on the little back gate and just raise the nose up and let him roll out.
It's like whenever they move cows and you see the cows being held up by helicopters or whatever and their little legs are sticking out.
Or maybe they have a fish tube system for the Baron.
Construction
garbage. That's a waste of water.
That's very true.
Well, they didn't note that they didn't take his water.
He's got dirty water. They don't want his.
They could still use his water for something, I'm sure.
He'd probably fill up an entire half cistern just by himself.
I thought that was particularly interesting. He's just out there. He's still all bloated. And
I wonder if it's symbolic more than anything.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. Oof.
More water for the ants.
Thankfully, we do not get, we don't linger on the ants crawling in his ears. Smash cut to
Reverend. The mom squad.
Yes, the mom squad. Reverend Mother, Jessica, and her posse making an entrance of all entrances. Yes. Just blasting into this room.
Burst open the double doors and just fast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're talking mom squad, we're also talking, power walking.
That's true.
And that's what they're doing.
Yeah, they have those fitness shoes that are supposed to make your butt look better.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
The walking sticks. Walking sticks. Yeah, they're mall walkers. Before.
Fanny packs, but also with the additional holster for the water bottle.
Of course.
Yeah.
Full of turned water of life, of course.
When I was younger, I was part of community theater too, obviously. I'm outing myself as the nerdiest person in the world.
Do you realize what podcast you're on?
Anyway, theater. I was in community theater. we did the Christmas story, or a Christmas story, and the Bene Gesserit outfits look just like our Ghost of Christmas Future.
Okay.
He had a cardboard box on his head that we draped with big dark colored fabric over like a mesh kind of. Wow. It's very akin.
Nice.
So that was all I was thinking about watching them walk in, was like, ooh, it's the Ghost of Christmas Future.
If you were going to ascribe any of the ghosts to Jessica, I think the Ghost of Christmas Future is probably the right one.
The most apt one. Yeah.
Yeah. It just is there. It doesn't say anything.
Right.
It's just like takes you to your grave.
Exactly. They're just cutting through this Fremen crowd like a hot Christ knife through a baron. That's what I wrote.
Okay.
In context, it makes sense.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this chair.
So it's a very nice, heavy wooden chair. It's got a good thud when it hits the floor.
It is. This wooden chair is being brought in.
Probably made of mahogany.
Or whatever future wood they have.
Whatever future derivation of mahogany there is on Caladan, because this is an Atreides chair.
Okay, well, yeah. I had a couple of comments on this.
Go ahead.
Well, maybe not comments, questions for the group.
Imperial comments, or?
No, just normal.
Oh, okay.
Was this chair made recently?
No.
How do you know?
It's got a nice patina on it.
You can do a lot with stains.
Also, it's got the Atreides logo on it.
Okay, so if it wasn't made recently, was it just in what a closet?
It for? Yeah.
Or was it just in storage?
Maybe, probably.
Because I didn't think that the Harkonnens would have kept anything.
You don't think so, but like, I also don't see the Harkonnens as big on like interior decoration, and they just kind of like take what they can get. In these situations, maybe it was like a spoil of war kind of thing.
Maybe that's maybe the only angle I could see it being, like them keeping it.
But also, yeah, like Vladimir wasn't spending a lot of time on Arrakis. Mm-hmm. Not that he would have been able to fit in this chair, but
right. He has his own comes with him chair.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I feel like there were other things that the Harkonnens were more preoccupied with than like, hey, do we want to keep this chair or not? And it was more just like, fucking set it aside, we'll get to it later, and then they never get to it later.
I guess. I'm just saying, like, it seems like they did a pretty good job of clearing out everything else.
Yeah.
There's no bulls hanging on the ceiling.
Sure. But where are you going to find this wood on Arrakis?
I don't think that they're concerned about maintaining or preserving a chair.
No, but your question was this made recently?
Mm, mm. Mm. We have seen trees.
You're not going to get a chair that heavy from a date palm tree.
Agreed. Because they're grass. They're not trees.
Yeah.
technically. I agree, which I have no answer to this question. And I have no preference one way or the other. I'm just saying it is an out of place object.
Also, it looks very much like the chairs that were on Caladan. So,
but I don't see why they would have kept it if they once they cleared out the palace. Why did they keep this chair?
Maybe they just liked it. I don't fucking know.
Raban's like, actually, just put it up against the wall so I don't see the back. Everything else, I love it.
Well, and even if it was there, where did they find it all of a sudden in this, like in the midst of all this chaos? They're just like, oh, cool. Hey, our chair is here.
We could use that.
Well, we have seen Jessica be a big fan of like being super extra and unnecessary about using the voice. So maybe she was like, find me a chair.
Any chair.
I'm pregnant as hell and my feet hurt. Find me a chair.
It just... it seemed like an out of place object to me.
It would have been cool if it had come with them from the south. Mm-hmm. I know that's not what happened, but that could have been neat.
I think it's more of just a reminder that, like, the Atreides were in charge very recently, which, if you follow the books, is not true because it wasn't very recent. But Denis's version, because fuck the time skip, because, you know, all of that. We don't get Leto the second, the first. We don't get Alia. You know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Liz, your comment about bringing it from the south just made me think of, like, a bunch of furniture, like, ratchet strapped to,
to the worms.
To the back of a worm.
Yeah. Well, it's like when she's in
a mattress
pod.
Is just flopping like crazy.
Yeah. A bunch of moving blankets and stuff. Yeah, that'd be funny.
Yeah. But Jessica regardless. Inside her little pod.
Yeah.
With a big chair also, I guess.
But it is a very nice chair. It's a very ornate wooden chair. And when Jessica sits down, she gets flanked on both sides by the rest of the crew. We get a fairly good shot of the helmets they're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Still love that design. Very
they're
odd.
So beautiful.
Yeah. It was very, very good looking stuff.
A lot of these costume decisions are very in the style of Alexander McQueen, which I think is fascinating.
I'm not familiar.
He has passed, but he did a lot of sharp clothing, sharp couture. There was a whole exhibit at the Met called Savage Beauty of his works, and it gives a lot of the same vibes as like the Bene Gesserit clothing and the Irulan's.
Cool.
Not so much the beaded headdress, but the
spiky one. Battle dress.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just something like sharp about them. That's kind of
cool.
Like evil and like a little bit sexy and yeah.
The perfect combo. we don't sit within their, or we don't stay with them for too long.
You can't sit with us.
You can't sit with us. The camera moves around and we get to see Chani making her way through the crowd, receiving pats on the back and what I can only imagine are, you know, just various forms of congratulations.
Glad that you're alive.
Yeah, you know. Well done back there. Cool judo flips. That was really nice.
Why'd you go bury yourself to immediately, you know, unbury yourself?
Yeah, well, you know, they'll pick apart the details later.
Nail the aesthetic, though.
Yes. Glad to see you still have your blue armband. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
So as she's walking through the crowd, she spots Paul across the room. And Paul is making his way from, I guess, like another door off to the back towards the main real big window.
Yep.
Real big opening in the room here.
And it's worth noting that this is the same room that Vladimir and Fade and Rabin were in when Shaddam first appeared. And it's the whole, why is he here? I have Spice Production under control room.
Gotcha. Interesting. Okay.
Yep.
Some of the Fremen seem to be stacking random technology by the window.
Look, if technology exists, you have to adjust it.
That's right. Like in any like crime procedural show, one guy is just moving boxes.
Yep.
Yep. He's just the box moving guy.
Yep.
And these are the tech moving people.
But we do get the sound outside of what sounds like a lot of fireworks going off in the distance. A lot of booms.
Yeah.
But they're not fireworks.
How many booms? Five big booms.
Your grandma just died. I'm sorry to hear that. Five big booms. Oh, God.
We're at Costco today. Fuck yeah.
No. It is not the Costco guys.
No,
it's is
boom, 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 boom.
And there's not five, there's 10. There's 10 ships in the sky.
I'll do them.
10 warships. The great houses are here.
Ah. They made it.
And I'm assuming that the great houses are here based on what Vladimir told Fade. Send a message to the great houses. Arrakis is under Sardaukar attack.
Now, Stilgar thinks these are warships. Paul has to correct him. And he says, the great houses. And then he turns to Paul, or to Gurney. He says, Gurney, it's time.
It's time.
Bring the prisoners. And Gurney nods, ever dutiful, and says, my lord, and rushes off to presumably go get the prisoners.
Yep.
Stilgar kind of starts issuing commands in Jacopso.
He's directing traffic.
Getting things started.
We don't get translation of this, but, you know, no, that technology goes over here. You know, do we have another one of those chairs?
He kind of turns around and starts like pointing at people like, hey, go this way or whatever kind of thing. So
we're clearing the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where our minute ends.
Right.
With Gurney's traffic directions.
Stilgar's.
Do you think Stilgar would be really big on air traffic control?
Nah. I think he would know how to do it, but he'd probably rather be a pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just wanted, you know, it was that sprained knee that really just ruined his career.
I'm not even sure that he fully enjoys being the leader of the Fremen, honestly. I think it gives him a lot of stress, and he would rather be just a normal just
one
fighter.
Of the guys. Yeah.
Just rather be a regular religious fanatic.
Yeah.
I mean, mood. Yeah.
Yeah.
He seems to be a knave out of, not obligation, but like, I just killed this one guy one time, and now I'm the fucking leader of this.
Yeah. Whole thing. Ask for this shit.
Nah, I'm projecting onto Stilgar at this point. But
I don't know. I've always thought of him as a bit of a reluctant leader.
Well, maybe that's why he's so accepting of Paul coming around. He's like, finally, someone else.
Somebody else.
Take this over. I'm tired of this.
Yeah.
Yep. Paul's still looking out the window in the last frame. And we get to see, or I'm anticipating, the great houses showing up.
Mm-hmm. Nah. Notably, no members of the Spacing Guild.
Nope. No guild.
Or Mentats.
So the houses showing up in the books is a fair amount different than here.
Mm-hmm.
When it happens,
even contextually, they're coming from a totally different preceding events.
Yeah, because it happens way earlier in the books.
Yeah, well, and at this point, Chani's already given birth to Leto the First.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already been killed.
Yep.
And, like, Chani and Paul have to talk about that. And none of that happens in here, and the Jessica talking to her about being remembered as, what is it, a wife, not a concubine, even though she is the concubine, not the wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the great houses, like, they show up before the battle even happens in the books.
Yes, I think so.
Because, like, they come in tow with the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this part that I think we've talked about on the show before, but I think because the great houses have showed up, I don't have a problem repeating it. The Emperor on his ship is, like, they make very specific note about the flags that the Emperor's flying on his ship. And they're like, he's not flying the Carino flag. He's not flying the Harkonnen flag. He's flying the flag of Chome, the economic body of the galaxy.
A true capitalist.
Yeah.
Yes, through and through.
He's flying the World Bank flag.
So
the Swiss motherfucker.
So the great houses are just kind of like in wait around the planet.
They're just hanging out.
Yeah, and they've gotten direction from the Spacing Guild saying, if anyone descends down out of orbit, you are cut off from guild access forever.
Can't do that.
Yeah, which is a pretty big threat. So they're all hanging out. They're just waiting because they don't want anyone to capitalize on the chaos down there, swoop in, steal spice, you know, get a foothold, whatever. So at this, like, once Paul has, like, gained control or gained control of the situation, that's when he's like, all right, go tell him to come on down here. Let's go have a talk, or at least get the Emperor down here. We're going to have a talk, which is what he does.
Let's have a little chat.
Yeah. But none of the other great houses come down. They're all just hanging out, kind of just waiting for the outcome of this nice, friendly chat that they are surely about to have.
Yep.
Yes.
Everyone will be very calm throughout all of it.
Right.
No one will be stabbed at all.
There are no tensions. Right. None. Tensions. Yeah.
It's actually a big potluck. And, you know, Shaddam forgot the deviled eggs at home.
Cardinal sin.
Guy.
Now, having the great houses orbiting the planet before the fight, I think holds a greater significance because they see everything that Paul does. They see him use the atomics. They see him ransack the temporary housing that the Emperor set up. They see all of this stuff and they're like, this guy is fucking insane. Which is exactly what he wants them to think, right?
This guy's crazy.
Yeah. So having them show up afterwards, I don't know, just as with a lot of things with this movie, it just lessens the impact of it.
Sure. In the book, you have a lot more time to lay out the Landsraad and the importance of the great houses and everything like that.
Oh, that's why the book is better.
I'm not saying that the book isn't better. It's way better in every way. But I can understand why Denis drops them in now.
Yeah. It took time to rent the Highliner. You know, they had to find one close by. Finding a guild navigator.
Someone forgot their wallet at home, so they had to turn around.
Passport.
Yeah. Yeah. Finding a guild navigator who's, you know, available on such short term or short notice is tough too. So I get it. But in reality, it was only like a day.
If that.
Not even.
Yeah. But it's an Arrakis day versus like, you know. Anyways.
Very true. Very true. I didn't even consider that.
Yeah.
So, that is the end of our week of minutes.
It is. And it's Friday. Which means one thing.
And only one thing. Possibly up to 10 things.
Possibly. Well, there's three of us, so it could be up to 30 things, realistically speaking.
If you had to, if Chris knifed to your neck, you had to give this week a rating, what would you rate it? Liz, you're our guest. You're going first.
Okay. I think I would give it 7 because there's so much different from the book that it gives a lot of interesting stuff to think about. There's a lot of action that happens even in just the first like 75 seconds of the week.
Right.
The fashion is wonderful that we get to see this week. And a bunch of Harkonnens get killed. So
it's true. Always good.
It's a pretty good week.
All right. 7. John, what do you think?
All in all, I want to absolutely nuke this week because this is the culmination of the consequences of Denis not including the time jump, not including Alia, and we are missing out on that incredibly important part of the story. However, that incredibly important part of the story is, what, 2.5-3 paragraphs long. And, you know, because of that, like, you know, I feel like this week really needs to sit in a lower score. Mm-hmm. However, Greg Fraser's cinematography, for me, saves a lot of this, of the score for this week. And, you know, we get to see the resolution Gurney deserves for his story, even the backstory that we don't get from the movie. And like Liz said, because it's so different, it is pretty self-contained for Denis's story and everything. And the biggest thing that saves the score for this week for me is just how absolutely perfect Stellan Skarsgård was as Vladimir Harkonnen. I don't think, of all the people that were cast for any role in Dune, I don't think there was a better person cast for a specific role.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Rest in
peace. Never see him again either. For sure. So yeah, like I can't help but fawn over that. That said, I think I, because of just like the complete loss of Alia and not having that important part of the story in this, I have to be a little lower and give it like a 6, 6.5. Okay. But you know.
Okay. I'm going straight 5. All the things y'all said, I would have, there's too much left out.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun talking about it. We always have fun talking about them, but there's too much left out for me. You're absolutely right. This is the culmination of all the things that have been left out and changed throughout the movie.
It's the culmination of Denis' sins of Dune.
Well, this is like the climax of the movie, but I don't know that it's the climax of the book.
No, it's not. I'm not going to say this is a small part of the book, but there's a lot more that's happening in the books here.
Yeah, that's what, 10 pages?
Yeah. If that. Well, I mean, technically we're in the last like chapter and a half of the book right now. Mm-hmm. I think this is the last two chapters are long ones, but we're in the last, definitely the last two, I think chapter and a half though. I would have gone lower, except we did have a honorary Glow Globe. Which I know it's not a true Glow Globe, but it still helped bring the score up. So yeah, straight 5 for me. It was beautiful. It was really, really well shot. Stellan played the hell out of dying.
Played the hell out of Vladimir Harkonnen throughout both movies. Let's
yes, absolutely. But yeah, just too much left out. The opportunities were there. And I wanted more from it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So 5 for me.
Yeah. 5, 6, 7.
5, 6, 7. There you go.
Yeah. Well, we are not done talking about Dune. We will be back next week with a different guest. Teased it on Monday. We have a returning guest.
Liz, cover your ears. You're not supposed to know we have other guests.
Rude. Okay.
we have a returning guest for next week to talk all about what's going to be happening when the prisoners are brought out by Gurney Halleck. Good friend of the show from season 1, Charlie, is returning.
Right.
We'll be talking with her about the next 5 minutes of the movie, and I'm super excited to have her on.
Yeah. You'll remember Charlie from the first time we see a worm in part 1.
Yeah,
the initial harvester scene. She was joined us for that stretch of minutes.
Yeah, she was there for episode 66 through 70.
Okay.
Yeah, she was our first guest ever, actually.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes, very excited about that, and very happy to have you with us this week, Liz. Thank you so much. Any socials or anything to plug? If not, we can just put them in the show notes. But
yeah, I don't know them off the top of my head.
Fair enough. All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us this week. We'll be back next week.
In the meantime, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back next week to talk more about Dune with our next guest, and we'll see you then.
All right. See ya.